Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network. The Nerd Party is home to podcasts looking at the films of 1994, nerdy life through a married lens, Star Wars, Star Trek, the filmography of A24, and much, much more. You can find those all on thenerdparty.com or find us on Twitter at @joinnerdparty. In today's episode, we're going to look at the short films of Hereditary and Midsommar writer-director Ari Aster. But before then, as always, is Dallas King. How are you, Dallas?
I'm very well.
Before we sort of dive into our main subject today, have you seen anything recently that you would recommend?
I've seen a reasonable amount of films. The big one would have been Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw, to give it its full title. Watched that on Thursday night with my dad. He got me into wrestling many, many years ago, back in the early 90s. We used to watch that together. So we've now got a new sort of family tradition where we go and see The Rock's films as close to opening day as possible. We saw Fighting With My Family earlier this year, so it made sense to go and see Hobbs and Shaw. I believe that my dad has watched most of the Fast and Furious films to get caught up with it. I think he started watching them when The Rock came in. He hasn't maybe seen the first ones, but I don't think you really need to see many of the Fast and Furious ones. This can be sort of taken as a straight sort of action comedy these days. And it's an interesting one. It very much plays up the sort of comedy sort of side of it as well as the action. And it's, you know, if you're looking for a big brainless summer blockbuster, this is right up your street. I think it's directed by David Leitch, who is the director of sort of Deadpool and David Deadpool 2 and one of the John Wick films. So he's certainly got a hand on the action and stuff like that. And with the sort of Deadpool side of it, I think they've, and Drew Pearce doing the script work on this one, it sort of really bumped up the sort of one-liners and stuff like that. So it's great to see these two sort of butt heads literally at times and go up against it. And I'm not going to spoil it because I know you're off to see it this weekend, but I did enjoy it a great deal. And fans of Glasgow will be able to see George Square appear as London yet again on the big screen. And a big shout out to the Greggs on the corner of Queen Street in George Square, which I did see at one point. So it was nice to see that. And, you know, fans of Glasgow, I think they did it with World War Z when it was being Philadelphia or Pittsburgh at the time, is that you can basically go shot by shot, as it, you can go London, Glasgow, London, Glasgow, London, Glasgow. So I look forward to hearing your thoughts on that one when you catch it.
Yeah, I'm going to see this one this afternoon. And as I always say, I use my girlfriend sort of as a Joe Public kind of barometer for these things. So she has never seen any of the Fast and Furious movies. But whenever we go to the cinema for months now, they have been, this movie has had a trailer attached to nearly everything, and she is so excited to see Hobbs and Shaw. So we are going along this afternoon. So she doesn't know anything about sort of the Fast and Furious stories or the characters or even what happened to poor Han. So I'm going to be real interested to sort of see her reaction. We're real anticipating kind of checking this one out. And, you know, Fast and the Furious, they're not just sort of recording in Glasgow, but kind of coming in a few weeks or maybe a month or so time, they're going to be doing some filming here in Edinburgh for the next Fast and Furious movie. So I'll have to keep an eye on that for some sort of super cars and some super talent descending on my beautiful city.
Oh, you might get to see John Cena, but then again, you know, you can't see me in terms of John Cena, so you might not see him at all. He might be invisible. You never know.
I get that reference.
You get that reference. Excellent. You see, I'm slowly teaching you the ins and outs of the WWE. It's good. One day you might even go to a live show. Who knows?
Chance would be a fine thing.
If but, we got WWE, they're coming to Glasgow in November. WWE, if you're listening to the podcast and you want to give us free tickets so I can introduce Lee to the world of wrestling, then you're more than welcome to send us a couple of freebies and we'll cover it on a future podcast. But I did also see Crawl this week. It was the Unlimited preview. And I'm not sure if you saw this one because I believe it clashed with the final of Love Island. You were probably watching that instead.
Yes, I went with the Love Island. I did originally have a ticket for it when I had this sort of faint hope that it might be Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But then with a week to go and I realised that wouldn't be the case, I decided to opt out and stick with Love Island for peace and quiet in my household. If I hadn't betrayed sort of our tradition of watching it with my partner, I think I would have had to have slept on the couch.
Absolutely. Did the final go the way you wanted?
I was sort of wanting a bit of a heel turn in terms of who won it, but yeah, I was happy enough with who won it. It wasn't the most vintage of series of Love Island, but I'm sure with Love Island Winter now becoming a thing where it starts doing Love Island twice a year, I'm sure there'll be a thrilling chance at redemption for the show.
Absolutely. So, I mean, this was, it's always fun. I like to get your thoughts on these unlimited secret screenings because they always prove quite contentious. Because, like you say, we had an outside hope that it might have been Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, although the fact that it then got rated with a BBFC rating of 18, not really that surprising, given it's a Tarantino film. That sort of put it out because this one was rated 15. But people always go in expecting it to be like a huge blockbuster, like Hobbs and Shaw or something like that. But, you know, these films that they pick for these secret screenings, they're not going to be the big releases because people are always going to go see them. It always has to be something that is looking for word of mouth. You know, loads of people walked out at last month's one when it turned out to be Blinded by the Light, the Gurinder Chadha sort of film about the young boy in Brixton, in Luton, who sort of grows up with Bruce Springsteen music and stuff like that. People didn't want to go watch that, so they all walked out. And when I was in watching, sat down for Crawl, you could hear the audible disappointment when they played the trailer for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and people realised it wasn't going to be that. But they did screen Crawl, which is by Alexandra Aja, who did Switchblade Romance, The Hills of Eyes, remake and stuff like that. And this is about a young woman who comes to the Gatorade, good pun, of her dad in a hurricane in Florida where he's trapped in the basement of a house or a crawl space, as they would have it. And it turns out that there is an alligator also down there and they have to survive not only a hurricane, but also a man-eating alligator. This is a sort of very effective, sort of very straight horror movie where it's about survival and stuff like that. I thought it was really well done. Great cast. Kayla Scodelario, who is in Moon, one of our favourite films, and also sort of Skins in the UK. She makes for a great scream queen. And I thought it was just a really effective, well-done film. But an interesting thing came up with this one, and it was something that came up during the Edinburgh Film Festival as well. People didn't think it was going to be Crawl because it was down as a Fright Fest UK premiere. But they seem to have got away with around it by the fact that it's basically screened at this thing because it wasn't advertised. Now, Cineworld also had a couple of previews of Yesterday and I think it was Brightburn, but they got moved around in Edinburgh because they clashed with the film festival. Were you affected by this? And because I know that one of our friends, Ross, was quite vocal about his displeasure at this, basically the previews getting delayed until after the films were screened at the festival. And this happened the year before when they were meant to have the UK premiere of The Incredibles, but then it turned out that was a secret screening on the same day as the launch of the film festival. Have you been affected by this? And what do you make of the secret screenings as a whole?
I like the secret screenings. If I lived sort of close to the Cineworld, just now they're usually sort of late on an evening on a Monday, and I'm kind of like, oh, I get home from work and I get settled and I know I won't kind of go. If there's a film that I'm really desperate to see that I think it might be a chance of seeing, I'll definitely go along and check it out. But I like the idea of secret screenings and stuff. And I think Pitch House Cinema are doing one. It was last night, actually. I don't actually know which one they went with. I was tempted by that. I think it's one of these ones that you go and it is a pick and mix, you know. I remember going to sort of the surprise screening at the London Film Festival last year, and it was Green Room, for example. So, you know, I don't think you can really moan about it. Oh, this isn't what I expected. I'm annoyed. I'm going to leave. You're like, well, I took a gamble on it. Maybe I'm going to get a good film. Maybe it's going to be crap. But you've kind of made the effort to go there, get your ticket, check in, go for the toilet before the film starts. So I think you should just sort of sit down and watch it. There's no point in leaving. I can't think of anything better that people have to do if they've already made that much effort.
I know, yeah. It's like if you've made the effort to go down and spend a couple hours at screen, you might as well, you know, at least respect the filmmakers and Cineworld's choice. And, you know, they've clearly chosen something that they think deserves an audience. So, you know, have the decency to at least stay for a couple of hours. You never know. You might actually enjoy the film if you actually give it a chance. So, yeah.
I caught a movie this week which really impressed me, and you know, impressed me so much that you actually, people, if they leave review for Filibuster on the iTunes store. So you can find links in sort of the show notes and so on online. So if you leave a review, you get the chance to win Benjamin, not one, but two copies to listeners, the new film from Simon Amstel. So I kind of have been sort of been trying to catch this film for a little while now. So I missed it in London. I missed it in the Glasgow Film Festival. And I finally got the chance to see it this weekend. And for those who are watching it, you'll be immediately taken by sort of the lead actor, Gabe Gilmore, resemblance to Simon Amstel in sort of appearance, mannerisms. And this film very much feels like sort of a very personal story for Simon Amstel. So it's all about a director who's kind of a rising filmmaker who's become incredibly stressed by sort of the upcoming premiere of his second feature. This film was also Simon Amstel's second feature. And it's, you know, an LGBT romance. And I thought it was a really sweet kind of British drama. You know, these are, you know, creative individuals, and, you know, oftentimes you watch these sorts of things about creative talents and it can be a bit smug, a little bit annoying. But in here, I thought it was really sweet, and I always felt like I was watching Simon Amstel bear himself, really, to an extent that, you know, you have this character and actor that feel like a cipher for him in his life. And I thought it was sweet, you know, some of the story, some of the comedy was really funny. It was just a really good British film, and I really hope people get the chance to see this one. And, you know, if you leave us a review, you'll get the chance to see this film, and definitely well worth checking out. I think Gabe Gilmore puts in such a good performance. I mean, he's now immediately become one of those actors that I'm keen to see what he does next.
Yeah, no, this was one which I was wanting to see. I think it was at the Glasgow Film Festival, but missed out there. And, you know, just like, you know, Hollywood loves movies about Hollywood, I'm really sort of keen to see this from the aspect that it takes place at a film festival. You know, we've been to many film festivals now, so that sort of insider outsider view of what it's really like sort of being at a film festival, I think, is something that I'm really going to look forward to see. So I'm definitely going to track this one down now it's available on home release.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's fantastic performances all around. So yeah, I can't recommend people check this one out highly enough.
Yeah, no, and it's certainly we've had a few entries in already on the reviews, and they're all glowing 5-star reviews, which is very nice. So yeah, keep it up.
So, as we kind of mentioned at the top of the show, nearly said top of the hour there. So when I've been kind of meaning to watch the short films of Ari Aster for a little while, because I know some people that have seen them. I know, when I looked at some of them on Letterboxd, only kind of maybe a couple people I knew had seen some of them, if any. And it's been on my agenda for a while. Like, I was going to right, I need to find all these different short films. It's going to be a pain. And then I sort of put a wee thing out on Twitter a few weeks ago where I was like, hey, does anyone know where I can find Ari Aster's short films? And someone pointed out that they're all on his website, apart from one of them. So Ari Aster's old Squarespace website is still there, with a Hereditary coming soon. And it's one of those ones that I've been really keen to check them out. And the fact that they were all there apart from one, again, it was easy to find that elsewhere. And I'm going to make sure that you can find all these short films in the show notes. I was like, right, I'm going to watch them. And you know what I want to do? I want to turn this into a podcast idea. Because the one thing I'd always heard about Ari Aster's short films, when people would be like talking about Hereditary or Midsommar, going, dude, that Ari Aster's fucked up, that people have often come back and went, wait until you see his short films. Like, this guy has always been fucked up. So that had me kind of immediately sold. And then I kind of messaged you. I was like, Dallas, I want to do this. I'm going to ping you the links. What was your reaction to the idea, and what did you sort of think going into this sort of like mini project of diving into short films?
I mean, I was absolutely keen to explore his back catalogue, to see, you know, what sort of filmmaker he was before. I didn't realise that he had so many. I mean, I guess, you know, it makes sense, you know, not everyone's going to suddenly just become this breakout sensation. It's like, oh, I've just made a feature without having done anything before. So I guess it does make sense. But then I think the link that you sent me, it was a web article that had collated all of them. And it's basically, it was entitled basically, you know, Before You See Midsommar, Watch Ari Aster's Fucked Up Short Films. And I think it's a very fair accurate representation of some of these films, because yeah, you can clearly see in a lot of them elements which have led him to become the filmmaker that he's become. I don't think he's ever going to do a straight romantic comedy or something like that. I think there's always going to be darker elements into them. And yeah, I'm looking forward discussing a lot of these films with you, certainly a couple of them which were, yeah, just messed up. Even more messed, and I think even more messed up. He's maybe gone slightly mainstream and toned it down slightly with Midsommar and Hereditary compared to his short work, I think.
No kidding. So let's start back all the way in sort of 2011, and we'll go through them in sort of chronological order. So we'll start with The Strange Thing About the Johnsons, probably his most famous or infamous short film, and this one was released by the AFI. So the Johnsons are an attractive, well-to-do, upper middle class family. Sydney's the husband and father is a famous poet, known and adored for his kindness and sensitivity. Joan, wife and mother, is a dutiful housewife, an obsessive homemaker and life of the party. Their son, Isaiah, is a charismatic young man who's got married to an equally appealing young woman. In fact, there is only one thing that separates the Johnsons from their charming friends and neighbours. Isaiah, the son, has been molesting Sydney, the father, since he was 12 years old. And what's more, Sydney has written a memoir that chronicles in great detail the ins and outs of this unseemly father-son relationship. Will the manuscript ever see the light of day, or will young Isaiah have a thing or two to say about it? So this is the longest of the short films at 30 minutes. So that is a hell of an introduction to a film and a filmmaker. What did you think about this short film, Dallas?
Well, wow. Yeah, I never read any of the introductions or any of the copy about these films. I just basically pressed play, and yeah, this was quite the introduction to Ari Aster's work. And it starts fairly innocently, I think you could say, as, you know, that sort of American Pie-esque sort of dad accidentally walking in on his son masturbating, and then sort of wanting to have this father-son conversation about, you know, what you're doing is normal, it's perfectly okay. And the son's like, is it? And it's like, yeah, no, you know, we all have these sort of feelings and urges, and it's completely normal. And you think, okay, that's fine, until you find out that the son was using a photo of his dad as inspiration, and you're like, oh right, okay. And then it just gets sort of worse and worse there, and it's a very, very messed up film, but actually very well made, and sort of deals with some really sort of dark subject matter, but I think it handles it quite sensitively, and sort of explores, you know, just how you try and deal with that when people are living with a secret and stuff like that. And I thought it was unexpected, but very well made, and there's a lot to be impressed with this one. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm sure that if anyone heard that alarm, they'll probably think of that as a trigger warning that we should have probably put before even telling people what this film were about. Yeah, this was not what I expected at all. I had the same thing as you. It's like this American Pie sort of like, hey son, you know, masturbating is perfectly fine, normal and natural. And then it was like, oh right, that's a twist. And what I respected a lot about this film was that it committed to the bit that it wasn't sort of ambiguous. It wasn't ambiguous. It was just that this son is molesting the father. You know, we see clips of things. It's never like, whether that's sort of it being a short film of half an hour, they're like, we just have to get everything out there and deal with it. There's no space for subtlety in between the lines. That I think it made it an all the more interesting film. It was one of these ones that you can sort of see those early sort of setting ups for the type of work that Ari Aster is going to do, that sort of family dynamics, you know, the strong kind of mother figure within the family. I thought it was a really interesting film. I think in the hands of maybe some other younger filmmakers, the idea of a film about incest could have been really badly handled. I think this film is at worst uncomfortable, but at best it's also uncomfortable. And I think it's a really brave first film to put out there. And I think it gives a really strong indication of what Ari Aster's style is going to be and what kind of filmmaker he is, and that he's not going to be someone to shy away from giving sort of putting a film like this out into the world.
No, I think it's what's interesting about the film is also the switch in the dynamic, and that it's the son abusing the father rather than, you know, we've seen, there's been many, many films down the years where it's been the parents have been abusing the kids, but it was an interesting switch that way because it opens up a new dynamic to it. And what was also interesting, and I was worried initially how it was going to play out, and the fact that this is a completely African-American cast and family, and it's, you know, Ari Aster is white and he's sort of telling this story, and I thought that was an interesting choice. And there were certainly moments in the filmmaking that sort of reminded me of Jordan Peele.
Yeah, I definitely got that strong impression as well. And I just thought it was, yeah, a really interesting one. And yeah, I think it definitely sets us up of seeing him. Like, I think with this film, I think it paints that this guy can write really messed up family dynamics well, which we see within, as I mentioned, sort of in Hereditary to come. And I think it's one of these ones, I think it's bold, it's interesting. It's, yeah, it could easily have gone into absolute silliness, for example, you know, towards the end when the father has run out into the street and has taken his life. And then, you know, the son, they're having the funeral and the son starts dressing like the dad. It could have kind of descended into sort of silliness, but I think and it's the same with some of the stuff that we've seen in sort of Midsommar and Hereditary. It threads that line really well between this could be really funny, but it feels like it makes sense within this sort of universe and story and tone. So we'll go with it and maybe raise a little smile at the absurdity of it all.
Yeah, no, I think what sells it are the performances, especially the father, played by Billy Mayo, who is also in the short Bo as well. He's not an actor that I'm familiar with, but based on his performance in these two films, I'm really keen to see more of him and see what else he's done. So I'll be checking him out. But I mean, there's enough, yeah, weirdness, but quality in the filmmaking that you can see just from this one particular short alone why a studio would take a chance on Ari Aster and let him tell his own stories.
So he followed that up, and as you said, Bo comes up next. So Bo never falls asleep, and it's his burden. This one was sort of all about sort of he's stuck within this house that he cannot leave, and we sort of get the impression that he played with a Ouija board at one time, and that is kind of giving him paranoia about leaving the house. So this one's just 6 minutes as well, and contains one of the same actors as well, as you highlighted from The Strange Thing About the Johnsons. What did you think about this 6 minute short?
I like this one a lot. Yeah, it was one of my sort of favorite ones, because it's a very simple concept. You've got this sort of paranoid man who, he's leaving work one day, he's left his key in the door, and he remembers he needs to get something from inside. So he goes and grabs it, comes back, and the key and his bag are missing. And then he's like, oh no, what am I going to do? Because people can now get into my house anytime. You know, he phones people, but they're not very helpful. He can't get a locksmith or the police, they're not very interested. So he's basically trying to stay awake the entire time he's home in order to prevent anyone coming in. But, you know, he then starts to maybe hear things and see things. And it's, yeah, like you say, it's 6 minutes, but it's incredibly well sort of set up short, and it's executed very well and sort of delivers a sort of punchline, which is quite interesting, but also leaves potentially many more questions at the end as well. But I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I think we also kind of see some of the shape of things to come as well. Like, I think he plays more with horror in this one, madness, paranoia, and it's sort of, it is quite, you know, you do get the kind of chills from this one. And again, it's sort of, we almost can see that if we blended this one with sort of We Need to Talk About The Strange Thing About the Johnsons, we could sort of start to see what we would get in Hereditary in a few years' time, that really interesting blend.
Yeah, no, I think it's just like a simple setup, well executed, and more what you would expect from what people would maybe consider to be a short film, because like you say, Strange Thing About the Johnsons was 30 minutes, and that's almost, you're looking at sort of TV episode length. This is short, sharp, bang for your buck, and very well executed, I thought.
So that brings us on to this next one, and I had to watch a YouTube video to make sure I pronounced this one correctly, and I absolutely kind of, it's probably slipped my mind. So, Munchausen. So, a mother is unable to confront the heartbreak of her son leaving for college and delays his departure by making him sick. Unfortunately, she goes too far and is helpless to reverse what she has set in motion and is forced to face an unfathomable consequence of her selfishness. So, Dallas, what did you make of this one?
Well, I think the correct pronunciation is Munchausen. Munchausen by proxy syndrome.
That's the one.
Which is basically sort of believing that you're ill and that sort of thing. This, for me, was my favourite of the short films. I thought this was exceptional filmmaking, and this was probably the closest to his final sort of works, especially with Hereditary. You can see a lot of the beginning of sort of Toni Collette's character in the mother character, who's played by Bonnie Bedelia, who of course plays Holly Gennaro in Die Hard. It took me a while to realize that was her, but I thought she was great. Now, this is what I really loved about this film, was the fact that this is a silent film, so there's no dialogue whatsoever. It's all done, and it's got music on the top of it. But it started off, I don't know if you got this feeling, but it felt very Pixar-y at times. It's sort of the look of the room and stuff like that, the music choice, it felt like almost like a sort of Disney sort of short kind of thing. And you know, actually it begins with a tapestry image, which again is very similar to the very first image we see in Midsommar. And I mean, it's got some wonderfully sort of dark comic moments, like in order to make her son sort of ill so he can't go off to college, she uses a bottle of feel bad medicine, and then she then tries to rectify this with feel good medicine. But I just love the fact that the first half of it is sort of she's seeing her son go off to college and sort of getting his degree, falling in love, and then sort of coming back, you know, getting married and stuff like that. And then it sort of reverts back to the she's left all alone, and then it snaps back to she's just imagined all this and her son's still packing, and then she decides she doesn't want to let him go. And that's when it gets into your traditional Ari Aster, really sort of dark territory stuff. And I just love this. I thought it was really well done, and it sort of stars Rachel Brosnan, who also is in, I think it was basically one of his other shorts, but she was really great in the US version of House of Cards, and is also sort of winning awards for, I think it's The Fabulous Miss Maisel as well. So she's an actress who I think is great, and it was nice to see her in the shorts, but then makes me wonder why. I'd love to see her in one of Ari Aster's feature films. I think she's a great actress, and would love to see what she can do with him on a feature film as well. So what did you make of this one?
Yeah, this one was one I really liked. I got the Pixar vibe as well. So with this, I was thinking of Up at the beginning. It's,
yeah, absolutely,
you know, silent film. It kind of plays with the music, and you're just watching it unfold. Like, oh, he goes to college, he falls in love. Oh, they sort of are living happily ever after. And the mother's just sort of there in the background, a little bit disappointed. So yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. And I was thinking, like, where's this kind of going? Sort of like maybe like the Twilight Zone or something. Like, come on, what's the Ari Aster twist here? Where are we kind of going with this one? And then sort of, as you were saying, it cuts to that moment where the mom is like, oh, I can't let him leave. And she sort of poisons her son. And it's just like, I love that if we were to ever go, you know, Ari Aster, I wonder what he would be like if he had made a Disney film or something, yeah, like that, as you say, yeah, a Pixar one. And it's like, yeah, I'll make it, but this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring this to it. I thought this was a really interesting one. And I think it's probably, it's one of those ones, it's just such a simple idea that you almost think, why hasn't someone else done that before, for example? That play on that really famous, I think it was called like the Michael Giacchino, The Married Life, mm-hmm, up, yeah, opening. But what about if you've just made it really like messed up? And I think they've absolutely nailed this here. I think it's such a brilliant idea, and it's incredibly well executed.
Yeah, I think if they ever gave him like a Pixar film, he would have been like at Toy Story 3, he would have probably melted the toys in the furnace at the end rather than having them all saved. He would have gone that dark with the ending of a Pixar film, I think.
Yeah. So that brings us on to Basically. So a bright but acid-tongued young actress walks the viewer through the drudgery of her privileged life in a series of clinical tableaus. And this is the first installment in Ari Aster's portrait series. So Dallas, what did you make of this one?
I really like this one as well. This one sort of reminded me of sort of Under the Silver Lake, actually. It sort of had that sort of strange sort of otherworldly view of Los Angeles, and I really liked it. This was the other one that stars Rachel Brosnan, and I thought she was fantastic in it. It's just a sort of random, almost seems like a random series of monologues, but she's really sort of telling a story about herself in this house and her family and sort of growing up and stuff like that. And I really like the sort of the way it was filmed and the close-ups, and but you've still got, as with all Ari Aster films, you think there's something not quite right here. And there always seems to be like this strange sort of person off in the background somewhere watching her and things like that. So nothing is ever quite what it seems with these ones. But I really like the performance of it from Rachel Brosnan was what sold it to me. She really sort of had a handle on the sort of fast-paced, rapid-fire dialogue, which had a sort of film noir-y, sort of LA Hollywood-style take on it. And yeah, this was probably sort of in the top three of his films for me, along with the Johnsons and Munchausen.
This was possibly one of my favourite ones, and it reminded me almost sort of like an American LA Fleabag. And just like, you have this brilliant actress talking to the camera, guiding you through her life. There's one scene where I could almost sort of a Fleabag. There's a scene where someone is going down on her while she's laying down, and she's just talking to you, us, the viewer. And I thought it was really good, and I could sort of see the Midsummer potentially coming here, that this one is sort of really shot in bright daylight, sort of that LA kind of sun. So many of these Los Angeles houses are beautiful whites, and it kind of reminded me that that Midsummer, that all in the daytime, all there, and sort of that the urge to be, you know, someone else, and, you know, talking about how the world maybe doesn't accept the version of you, and, you know, the challenges of being an actress. And I just thought the performance from Rachel Brosnahan was so good, and I was like, why have I've seen her in House of Cards and some other things, and I was just like, with this and sort of her work in these shorts, I thought, oh, I need to watch more of her work here. And I just thought she was excellent, and this was possibly one of my favorite. I thought the dialogue was excellent, just that you can go from something like the what we've just kind of gone through, where it's like completely silent in terms of dialogue, to something like this, which is just phew, 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 go go go. And I think Ari Aster, as we mentioned, he is a white male, but I think he has written really well for this kind of white female character here. I think it's definitely earned maybe sort of an American Fleabag reputation.
Yeah, no, I think what Ari Aster has proved, I think, in certainly in his features and with this, is that he can actually write really well for female characters. He's got such strong female characters. You know, you had Danny in Midsommar, and then Toni Collette in Hereditary. You know, it's all obviously all backed up by incredible performances, but it's actually giving them, you know, these fully formed three-dimensional characters that you can, you know, we're dropped into Midsommar, for example, where Danny is basically immediately reeling from the death of her family, but you can see how she got to the point where she is. You can see her insecurities with men and stuff like that, and also the hurt that's been caused by her family. And, you know, Toni Collette is, as we've banged on about probably on this podcast and on A24 many, many times, was deserving of an Oscar for the dinner scene alone. And, you know, this is really sort of shows his strength in writing female characters and having that dialogue, sort of rapid fire dialogue, that is great for that sort of femme fatale character. So I mean, it's based off of this, I would really like to see his sort of take on a film noir or something. I think it'd be something really exciting to see.
Yeah, so that brings us on to a film that could be completely different to what we've just discussed there, and that's The Turtle's Head. So an aging, hilariously slimy detective with a taste for womanizing is distracted from the case of his career when he starts developing a mysterious medical condition which causes his penis to shrink and threaten to end up inside him for good. So Dallas, what did you make of The Turtle's Head? I'm the same as you. I did not read anything about these films going in. What did you make of The Turtle's Head?
Well, I don't know if Turtle's Head means the same thing in America as it means over here, but I always thought the Turtle's Head was something to do with taking a dump and having a turtle's head. But it turns out to be maybe meaning something else in the US. And, you know, I just mentioned the sort of film noir aspect. This one starts off as your sort of gumshoe, private eye sort of thing, and with this actor who has appeared in like loads of films and sort of bit parts and stuff like that, and he's sort of telling the story, and this is quite saucy for Ari Aster's work so far. It's definitely the most raunchy in terms of sex and sexy dialogue and stuff like that, but it then suddenly turns on its head and is about this man dealing with a shrinking penis, and yeah, it becomes this sort of very dark comedy. And I think afterwards I sort of read sort of a sort of body horror element of it, and I mean there's maybe sort of one rather gross shot at the end where you actually see it, but it's all again wondering if it's in his head and stuff like that. It sort of makes you doubt what you're potentially seeing and stuff like that. And yeah, this was probably up there with the Johnsons as the most weird and messed up of them. But again, there was enough confidence in the concept to sort of play it off, I thought. What did you make of this one?
I really liked it. Again, I think we can say it about Hereditary, Midsommar, and most of his shorts is that when Ari Aster has an idea, he commits to the bit. And I like that because I think it shows a confidence that I can imagine, like, this is like several movies in, we're like only a couple years away from Hereditary at this point. And like, you can imagine certain directors, it would be, you know, they play on it a little bit more, like, ooh, what's kind of going on here? And I just like how it sort of, it commits to the tone. You know, it takes sort of like, we're starting with this sort of film noir, and then it just completely turns around into sort of comedy. And I think that we've sort of spoken before that, you know, some of these films can be funny, perhaps intentionally, a bit unintentionally. But I think that it blends well, that a little bit of the humour, that we'll, the body humour that we'll kind of maybe come to get in sort of some of his other films. But I think you also get some shots here that do make you feel uncomfortable, that are quite disturbing as well to watch. I'm sure that we can leave that to the audience. But yeah, I think it's really good. Again, it picks up little things where I think we'll see more to come in sort of his future films. But yeah, I liked that there was an idea. I think I saw for the Turtle's Head in the credits that the film had been inspired by a friend or someone like that, that had an original sort of story idea, and Aster kind of adapted that one into sort of this mini little 12-minute movie about this kind of penis. And it struck me as very, like, it would be one of the best student films that you can imagine, sort of a university or film academy of that year, that people would genuinely enjoy and love this one. And I think this one is definitely well worth the watch.
Yeah, no, it's Richard Reich is the guy who plays the detective, the private detective of this, and he turned up in a very small role in Munchausen as well. But he's sort of like one of those actors who you sort of see in other films and go, oh, that's that guy from that film, but you never sort of remember his name. So I just wanted to shout out his name. You people will recognize him as soon as they see him. He's sort of short, balding guy with a white mustache, and yeah, you'll know him when you see him. So yeah.
So that brings us to our final one, and this is the second installment in Ari Aster's portrait series. So an aggressive homeless man berates the viewer regarding the circumstances of his life and wrongness of everything. So what did you make of this second part, and how do you think it complemented the first one?
Well, yeah, this was very similar in terms of setup and execution to basically, but in this time the subject of the film is like a homeless man living on the streets of LA, and again you could sort of have allusions to Under the Silver Lake in terms of how they use the sort of homeless sort of network of LA. It reminded me of sort of the stand-up work of Dennis Leary, who would always go on these sort of long epic rants and stuff like that about society and things like that, and it reminded me of him and his work, and it's this guy basically berating LA and people and consumer culture and stuff like that. So it was one of those sort of a very sort of angry film, but again sort of done with enough sort of style and humor that it really worked, and you could sort of see Ari Aster's voice really starting to come through in terms of the dialogue and stuff like this. And he can write for different characters, different genres as well, but it's always feels very true and authentic in what he does, I think.
Yeah, I think like it complements sort of the different types of LA as well that we see in the first one. We've got the social climber, someone that is doing everything to get ahead and that, and then we see someone like, you know, I've visited LA a couple times, and it definitely has like this homeless problem, and it's always that contradiction of LA that it has, truly has the has and has not. And I think it's interesting, the second part, you know, we go to the complete opposite end, and you know how LA has let down this person. And I think it while in that first one we see all these beautiful homes and, you know, locations, beautiful sunny beaches, and here we're sort of seeing those unglamorous locations that we don't necessarily see in Los Angeles, and I think it complements really well. And I think it was a really good way to kind of work together to do this sort of two-part series.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a great counterpoint to basically, and also, yeah, sort of shining a light on the other side of of Los Angeles, and it felt almost sort of very guerrilla at some point. I think at one point there's a cop on a horse sort of comes up, and I was just wondering, it's like, did they have permission to film this bit here and stuff? I can imagine that as soon as the camera cut, the policeman was probably going to ask them what the hell they were doing or something like that. So yeah, it felt sort of very urban and guerrilla, and I like that as a counterpoint to the, like you say, the sort of Hollywood glitz and glamour of basic life.
Yeah, and I liked how it sort of, again, it almost seems like the perfect way to sort of go in, like you watch this and you could almost go into Hereditary, because I think it's that, you know, when they've got it towards the end, it's like, oh, you know what Freud says about the nature of horror? He says that when the home becomes unhome-like, that's when the whole place has become, and that's what this whole place has become, this whole time, this whole country and whole everything else. And I think that's sets us nicely up for what's to come in sort of Hereditary, when we have this family home completely fall apart and it drives everyone to very different fates. And I think that line just seems like such a great segue into shoving Hereditary on TV.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, just watching these sort of short films over the course of one day, it does make you want to immediately go back and revisit Hereditary in Midsummer to see those sort of threads sort of flow into his feature work.
Most definitely. So now that, as you say, you've watched these short films, that you're probably going to have a big spike at the end of the year when you log into your Letterboxd stats for your most watched director. But yeah, I think it was really good to sort of see what Ari Aster was like before Hereditary and Midsommar. For, you know, it's amazing what's happened in just a couple of years for this director. But when you look at sort of it overall, sort of almost a decade now, we go back to 2011 for The Strange Thing About the Johnsons, is that this guy has been a great talent for a long time. And, you know, people talk about Midsommar being sort of written before Hereditary, and you can sort of see when it was being written around these times with these short films where some of the inspirations and ideas that get played with come from. So I think it was a really, you know, a good way to spend a journey. And the fact that they were all easy to find online as well made this all the more easy to do.
Yeah, no, it's nice that he still has an old website. I didn't realise that he's still got his old... when you said Squarespace, I initially thought you said MySpace. He still had an old MySpace page with all his original work. But it's good that he still has that and has made it available for free to see it. And yeah, I highly recommend any fans of Aster to go back and check out that work. And I didn't actually realise they'd all be on Letterboxd. So yeah, no, I'll be adding them onto my final total, absolutely.
Definitely. So Dallas, obviously you'll be back next week with Kim. Can you give us a little preview of what's to come?
Yeah, well, you're taking a well-earned break. So, and because you haven't watched Stranger Things, me and Kim will be taking a deep dive into Stranger Things 3 to look at all the different aspects of our 80s nostalgia and what we liked and disliked about the series. So that'll be great. But then I think we'll be back all together again in sort of 2 weeks' time to talk about the new Tarantino film. And I'm going to be interviewing a real-life projectionist. There's not many of us left out in the wild, so I'm recording an interview to get a behind-the-scenes look at what it'll be like to work on that new release as well.
I can't wait for that. So yeah, if you want to reach out to you, Dallas, to talk about, you know, the differences in what a turtle head is, I'm with you. I always thought it meant dump as well. But if people wanted to debate that with you, where could they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at champcelluloid, and also on Instagram under the same handle as well. And what about yourself?
And you can find me on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo and Instagram on the same handle. So thanks to everyone for listening, and definitely check out these short films in the show notes, and have a messed up time. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.